Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're going to talk about a book which we've talked about before. Well, I've talked about before.
Yes.
And it also comes up in conversations about science fiction quite a bit.
It does. It's like, yeah, it's... It comes up.
And we watched the movie. Well, we actually worked out, it was a while ago that we watched the movie Starship Troopers.
Yes.
And we were like, oh, let's do it. And I was, at the time, obviously, I was thinking, oh, I'll reread the book and we'll do something, you know, like the book versus the movie. But not a lot in common. I mean, there is a lot in common, but a completely different point of view. Starship Troopers by Heinlein. Should we do it?
Yeah.
Robert A. Heinlein.
I'm looking not looking forward. I'm interested in hearing your perspective on it. Let me put it this way.
No, I mean, my perspective is it's... changed a bit. Now, here's the thing. The reason why I'm rereading this or I re-listened to it as an audiobook is because we were discussing our SFBRP must-read science fiction list.
Yes.
So what makes it onto the book? Is it only good books or is it also important books?
On the list.
On the list.
Yeah.
You know, like we were saying before, like, does it get onto the list or does it not get onto the list?
Yeah.
Does it stand up or does it not stand? You know, all these different things. What is the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast must read list for? Is it stuff that you must read because it's really good or must you read it because it's like foundational?
Yeah.
And I think it has to be both. I think you can read something that's foundational and it can now, you know, 120 years later, in the case of some H.G. Wells stuff,
yeah,
might not hold up, might not be worth reading, and ideas that are there aren't very good. But then when you reread War of the Worlds or The Time Machine, you're like, oh no, this is actually, you know, there's actually, it's still good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if not everybody thinks so, and the average rating on Goodreads might be a bit lower than for a modern, you know, alien invasion book or whatever.
Yeah. And some books are so influential on the general genre.
Yeah,
and
but
what
some
things...
of them are really shit.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Let's get on to this one. First of all, I'm going to just talk about the book itself and why this is my personally lowest ranked book, which I put onto the SFBRP must reads list.
Okay.
Because, you know, I said I had these different things, like all of these have to be a novel, but then like a novella squeaked in there and a short story yeah. collection squeaked in there. And they all have to be science fiction, you know, or something like that. But then a fantasy book squeaked in there because it's, you know, from one reading, it's a science fiction book, you know what I mean? So, and I said all of them have to be at least 4 stars. But one of them wasn't 4 stars. I gave this book 3.5 stars last time I reviewed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still thought, probably should go on the SFBRP must read list.
So, and this is why you reread it to
find out. Would I rate it higher so it can unambiguously be on there? Or would I rate it lower and should it still remain on the SFBRP must read list? Spoilers for this, it remains on the SFBRP must read list. But now I'm going to explain why for me it's only a 3.5 star book.
Okay. And you've read it before? And
yes,
you've
talked about it before. Yes, I've read it before, talked about it before. Something here was like episode 118 from January 2011. So it's been quite a long time.
Yeah.
Talking like 13, 14 years since I last read this book and talked about it. No, not since I last talked about it. Since it was its own episode.
Yeah.
This book has come up in many other times. So anyway, good things about this book. No, not good things. I'll explain those things. The reasons why this doesn't stand up. Doesn't hold up to today.
Okay.
As an interesting, good, fun novel read. Not every book has to be fun to read, but in a book like this, there should be some fun to it.
Right.
And there is plenty of fun to it. It's you know, macho men in power armor, you know, dropping onto planets and killing bugs, you know, bug aliens.
Right.
Arachnid aliens.
Yes.
Which is good fun. The unfortunate part is that only happens like twice in the whole book.
yeah, so you can't really say that is what it is about.
Well, it is about, I mean, that is the framework of it. Mm. We are with the Starship Troopers. We are with the troopers that are on starships that go around and do the power armor military drop, you know, dropping down onto the thing. And I was just looking at the Wikipedia page. Yes, and they're saying all of these other creators, all these other authors, all these like movie makers, like James Cameron in the sort of, it was called, yeah, this is, we're the Bug Hunter, the drop, you know, the military drop, and that the there's like a macho-ness to the aliens in sorry, not to the Marines in Aliens. Like,
yes,
that's what this is. They don't have so much power armor, but they've got like that those prostheses, and they have a drop, you know. And but power armor is kind of expensive to do in terms of special effects, so it's just Ripley that gets the power armor at the end and put her down, you bitch, and things like that. And so it's like playing around with that macho, you know, Bug Hunt Space Marines image there. And he's like, yeah, of course. He says, he even said, the Wikipedia said page says, oh, I gave all of the Marines, all the actors playing the Marines, I gave them all Starship Troopers for them to help them understand who they are in this and to help them get into character.
Right.
So everybody who has used this as a base of their own stories, everybody else who's, you know, all these other science fiction books that are in dialogue with it, they're all like macho Marines in power armor.
Yeah.
And all of that seems to come back to this. But when you actually read this book, you're like, oh, that's like 10% of the book. The actual military scenes is like 10%, you know, the military action scenes. So what I said in my previous review, I said, look, if you're just going to have a book which is like lots of lectures about politics, what I made a note here, I said, yeah, if you're going to do political lectures or politics lectures, at least open and close with mech wearing soldier dropship action scenes, if you know what I mean. Like exactly what you want from, you know, we tried watching that Avatar 2, and it's like, all right, here we go, the brain dead mobile infantry units going down there.
It's always like the idea that the infantry has to blindly just believe and do for the whatever they believe in.
And they have to, because they're the ones on the front line who are going to die if anything goes wrong. And even if things go very, very right, you want those people to believe that what they're fighting for is good.
They're going to be on the hero side.
Yeah, they're definitely
the heroes.
They're not
going to be like, are we the baddies kind of situation.
Yes, you don't want that at all. Anyway, so that's the good part. And also the good part is the political lectures, mostly, except in this read-through, I realized that... Sure, if you're going to do political lectures, have some action to begin and end with, but also too much political lecturing. There's like three too many chapters of literally classroom seminars where some old, you know, crusty guy with only one leg sits down and delivers a lecture about, you know, the morals of war and the implications and the political stuff like that. So, so there's too much. There's too much of that. Also, this book is a bit clumsy. Well, put it this way. This book was written off the back of someone who'd been through, who had experienced, and whose main view on what war was the Second World War.
Yeah.
So in that case, it's very easy to have a very like clear villain, which is, you know, Germany, Nazi Germany, you know, Imperial Japan, you know, the Axis powers. It's sort of like, oh, this is actually a very clean way of doing, of having something bad to
and
fight against.
And also something very anonymous, like a group of people, like of like an anonymous mass of like the something.
In this case, in the book, it's the bugs, it's the arachnids, the very alien other. But what I'm saying is that I recently talked about Joe Haldeman's The Forever War.
Yes.
And that was based on someone's first-hand experience of being in the military, of being an infantryman in the Vietnam War.
Yes.
And then you're sort of like, yes, and go in and kill these people, and you're like, oh, why these people? You know, and suddenly that was like a lot more messy war. And the whole idea, the foundation and behind both of these wars, one is we're being attacked, and this is Heinlein here, we're being attacked by a hive mind, something that is completely unhuman, completely alien, completely inhuman, and we have to defend ourselves, and the best way to defend ourselves is to attack and to, you know, to push out, you know, and do that, okay, which again is very, very handy for a book which is about how, you know, when war is the option, here's what we need to do to have an effective fighting force.
Yeah.
Whereas for the Forever War is much more of sort of like, oh, that whole war, spoilers for the end of Forever War, it's like, well, it was all a misunderstanding, you know. We shouldn't really have been at war with them, you know, because they it was just a mistake, because they're a hive mind. They didn't realize that killing some of that kind of thing. And that happens as well in other military science fiction books, where there's kind of like this easy out at the end to say, ah, war was bad all along.
Yeah.
And at no point in this book is there war was bad all along.
Right.
Like, we should have given peace a chance. In this, it's sort of like, no. Again, this is the setup of the book, which makes it very, very easy to say that if war is the right course of action, mm-hmm. here is how it should be done.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it dodges the question, is war the correct thing to do?
Yeah. It doesn't even consider that that could be...
But it does consider that at the very start of the book, there is peace, or there isn't a war at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's very much based on the idea that war could be possible at any moment. So let's make sure that we're always ready
prepared.
For war.
Mm.
Let's be for war. So it is a very militaristic politics. And also, you only have the franchise. You can only vote and have a say in politics
right.
if you've served in either in the military or, you know, done some other kind of civil
yeah.
service. You know
at
what I mean?
At that point, it then always feels to me like, you know, if you are a hammer, every problem is
well
you
yeah
know.
Again, that is another thing to
the
do
saying.
But this book is very focused on the idea that war is the correct thing to do,
yeah,
to the point that when he signs up, his father, you know, Johnny Rico, the hero, the protagonist of Starship Troopers, he joins up, and his father is like, no, why are you even doing that? There's no war on at the moment, that's no good at all. By the end of the book, his father has signed up has also joined the military.
Okay.
Has also signed up to be a soldier in the military as well. So it's very, very clear in this book that this is a book about a world where we have to fight.
Right.
Which, again, I'm not going to say is good or bad in this case, but that is what this book is about. So it feels to me much more like, all right, what would a science fiction book about space marines and armors be if it's someone who has been maybe sort of stationed in Britain in the First World War, in the Second World War,
yeah.
where you're like, all right, like Germany's just there. Like mm-hmm. we're having air raids, and the air raids happen in this book. You know, they wipe out, I think it's Buenos Aires or whatever the city is, which entire cities are going up in smoke here, and they're like, right, we've got to respond. You know, mm-hmm. we've actually got to sign up and get a military going as well. So again, this book is a book which is the main assumption of this book is that war is the correct course of action.
Okay,
and then from that foundation, if war is the correct course of action, what's the best way for the war to be run and the soldiers to be treated and all
and
that kind of stuff?
And educated.
Yeah. If war is required, what kind of political lectures and seminars should we be giving our soldiers when they want to become, when they're training and when they want to become officers? And that's the basis of this book.
Right.
Assume war equals good. If war equals good, what should they learn, and what should we be teaching them for them to become the most effective military leaders?
Yes.
And so this book is a very rigorous exploration of that idea, to the point where this kind of becomes foundational to, I think, all subsequent science fiction where war is assumed to be good. And that is... That is a lot of science fiction. Pretty much all military science fiction following this book, if the assumption is that war is the correct course of action, this book is kind of the training manual for every single other science fiction book that comes after that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To the point where it's like all this other military science fiction that you read, which can be, you know, space. It doesn't have to be like, you know, dropships and power armor. But anytime that there's anything, you know, any kind of war against aliens, you're like, oh, right, we've got to defend ourselves, or we've got to defeat the alien. It really is. Let's give Starship Troopers to all of the actors playing these roles.
Like Independence Day or something like
well,
that.
Well, yeah, maybe Independence Day, whatever it's going to be, yeah. whatever it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But that's that. Not so much Independence Day, because that's like an alien invasion movie.
Okay.
But also, yes, kind of, you understand that if that war would go on and on and on, all of the people there are like, all right, we have got like we got to get humans out of this, you know, situation. Mm. And what should we do? So if you reading like, you know, I read the that trilogy of Warhammer books.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Warhammer, again, taking it in even into like further and further and further steps and also in more of a satirical point of view with those books. But again, it's just assumed that every person in those books, every character in those books has been given Starship Troopers to help them get in character.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I have an important question.
Yeah, what is your important question?
I don't know if this fits here, but you did mention it just now.
Mm.
How do you know that Heinlein or this story of war equals good and the way that this is all written out, that is not satirical? How do you know that?
It's not that it's not satirical, but there is no satire in this book.
Okay.
This book is making some ground assumptions, mm-hmm. fundamental assumptions about the setup of the world.
Yeah.
And if those hold true, this is what needs to be done to make sure that people like young men become good leaders.
Okay.
In the future.
Yeah.
In an into some kind of interstellar war against faceless hordes of aliens.
Yeah, because I think you do need to tell young people, I'm not quite sure how old they are, but yeah,
this was written as a juvenile book. This is a book for teenagers. Like,
so if you have a group of people that are like, let's say 18, you know, just for, you know, legal age, and then you can decide what you want to do. You need to tell people certain things that they then do and follow this. Like,
no, wait
like,
a second. I want to separate this out. This is not like, I don't look. I can't say what Heinlein was thinking or saying or believing. You know, I just read through the Wikipedia page and there's loads of criticisms of this book. So I'm like, oh, it's super racist because the way he's portraying the aliens is, you know, because he was thinking that the United States was being too soft on the communists. Mm. But here's the thing. If you just defeated the Nazis and you think the communists are as bad as the Nazis.
Yeah.
Like, again, I'm not apologizing. Like, I'm not doing any apologists for like anyone who is like, what am I trying to say? All these McCarthy kind of things, like, you know, clearing out of people, the Red Scare and all that kind of stuff. What I'm trying to say is that the point of view of the people in the book, I can't read into that what the author is thinking all the time.
Okay.
That's very difficult. And I also don't care about what Heinlein was thinking at the time.
Mm.
Like, I don't care if he was being racist or talking about communists when he's talking about bugs and arachnids here.
Right.
That can't be what I'm critiquing about this book, or because I don't know what he was thinking. In many of his other books, that isn't what he was talking about. You know, there's another book called this is called Starship Troopers. Another one of his books is Space Marines, and some Starship Troopers turn up in that, and the main character's like, I want to be one of these Starship Troopers, and his, you know, political officer or whatever says, no, you don't want to be those because those are the numbskull. You know, they're just going yeehaw. You know, they're going like hoo ha and going into war. You are part of the space navy, and you're going to be wearing a white uniform, and you're going to be sitting down and having, you know, and having dinner with the other officers. You know, it's like the other completely other thing. And you're like, oh right, so that isn't in other parts of his fiction is where he, like, super libertarian and you know, other kind of stuff and creepy sex stuff and all that kind of stuff. And the creepy sex stuff in his other books is the opposite of what happens in here. In this book, everyone's super chaste, you know, and this is sort of like what Joe Haldeman, it's like the opposite, you know, when in Forever War I was saying, oh, the sex is really weird, you know, but in this book there is no sex at all. It's completely sexless. The women in the who are the pilots, you know, the Starship pilots are all women, and they're all kept behind locked doors at the front of the ships, and all the Starship Trooper men are at the back of the, and they're sort of like, oh yeah, we all have to fight, and having pretty women on the ship is a great way that, you know, the last voice that they hear before they leave the ship is the captain of the ship saying time to drop, and it's like, it's the opposite of like so much of other Heinlein views on this. So it's almost impossible for me to say what Heinlein was thinking or saying with this book.
Right.
And okay. Also, I don't care. All I can talk about is the influence of this book on other science fiction.
Right.
Because I don't care if it affects other people. What I really like is that the movie Aliens exist.
Yeah.
You know, and that Ripley is the opposite of the Marines. You know what I mean? The Space Marines in there, it doesn't matter that they're all Heinlein protagonist characters. Mm-hmm. The person who saves the day in the end isn't the macho man. It's the woman who is, you know, it's the woman and it's the female. It's the women who are fighting at the end. One of them to save her daughter, not real daughter.
Yeah.
And the other one to save her daughters, which are the eggs and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
James Cameron understands that what these characters in these movies are, which are the Starship Troopers, they aren't the most important characters. And actually, we don't need to talk about what they think and how they do it, because it's already been done before. It's been done in Starship Troopers by Heinlein. And because Heinlein has done this in Starship Troopers, no other science fiction author needs to talk about what is like what the mindset of the macho Starship Troopers in the power armor needs to be. It's sort of like we've had that covered in the same way that when you read the first ever the first ever book about like time travel, or the first ever book about whatever, the Ansible, or this kind of thing, or that kind of thing, that can now be foundational, and that doesn't have to be re-explored by every other science fiction writer afterwards.
Yeah.
And that's what this book is. This is the foundational level of military science fiction. So any other military science fiction that you read about it, you don't need to get bogged down in the politics of this.
Mm.
You can just say, oh, a bit like Starship Troopers. And you're like, oh, okay, a bit like Starship Troopers. You know, it's like the same kind of thing where you... where you're talking about something which is utopian, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to go, oh, utopian like this. And it's sort of like, yeah, okay. Like, so everyone has enough food and everyone can, you know, all the utopian tropes. You don't have to go over those again, because you can just, like, reference other utopians. Same with dystopian. You don't need to, like, no book has to describe why massive amounts of, like, video cameras on everyone and nobody allowed to do anything and thought crime is a thing and everyone has to keep... No, 1984 did that.
Mm.
Now we don't have to repeat that. So when you see surveillance cameras everywhere, that can just be like a shortcut in a book or a shortcut in a movie. Surveillance cameras everywhere, and you know, shadowy figures watching that. You know, like when we watch the silo thing. You know,
yeah.
And we don't need to be told who the bad guys are. The bad guys are the people with the secret rooms and putting secret cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
But we know from 1984 why that's a bad thing and what that is doing, like what that is doing, and how this piece of science and technology is enforcing a political system and the power of control over people.
Mm-hmm.
The work has already been done. So I would say that Starship Troopers is kind of doing the same foundational work as a 1984 is doing for every other science fiction in that, you know, references that same thing does as well.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. I can go along with this.
Yeah.
But I also think the criticisms that come for this book are still...
Oh, I haven't got into the criticisms of the book yet.
Okay. Oh, I thought you started off with the...
No, what I'm saying is, it doesn't matter if the people call this book fascist or militaristic or glorifying the military.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter to me, because I can read that into that. I can read that stuff in it myself. And obviously, the whole idea of that this mindset or this way of running a military and doing that kind of stuff... All of that has been critiqued throughout all following science fiction, which is referencing this.
Right.
You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yeah,
Starship
okay.
Troopers, the movie, is a satire based on this.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. when you read, or you know, like I was just saying before about Aliens, the movie, like what doesn't work is this. The, you know, the Space Marine mindset doesn't work because of this, although that does tie up with the corporation, you know, and so that's also an anti-corporation kind of story too.
Yeah, and the woman was kind of like accidental. It wasn't there in the first place, right?
The Ripley not being a female character is in Alien, not Aliens. The time Aliens, the second movie, comes around, is definitely a female.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And is a main character in that way. What I'm saying is, though, that like any criticism of Starship Troopers is secondary. The only reason why there needs to be criticism of this is because this, if this was as frivolous as all other military science fiction afterwards, it wouldn't need rebuttals and it wouldn't need criticisms.
Yes.
But because it is foundational, and here's the thing, it's rigorous. Yeah. Like, it is a very, like, again, taking the foundation that war is good or war is the best course of action right now.
Yeah.
What we need to do is this. Mm. It's very difficult to argue against this. And that's what I kind of find disappointing about some of these other military science fiction, where the twist is at the end, oh, war wasn't needed all along. It's like, no, but you can't just say, oh, that wouldn't work if the foundational aspect of what makes this work wasn't there. Hmm. You know what I mean? You can't just take away one of the axioms of something and just say, your argument falls apart. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That's like telling a fantasy story and at the end sort of like, oh, but magic doesn't exist. It's like, yes, we know magic doesn't exist, but you can't just say, or you read The Lord of the Rings and say, oh, why didn't the eagles fly the rings? And it's sort of like, no, well, look, we've got to say that eagles aren't just going to fly the ring somewhere. Otherwise, we don't get the book that we got.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
We have to have an evil that we fight against, because if you just say, oh, well, Sauron was just misunderstood, maybe you could have just appeased him. Oh, why are we doing this? You know, sort of like, oh, it was just a racist depiction of the East and whatever it is. It's sort of like, yeah, it doesn't matter about all of that. Like, the way that we get the good fiction is by allowing the science fictions or fantasy authors a few basic premises to their writing, which we just have to take in good faith to then have the interesting stuff, either story, explorations, politics like that. And just because you disagree with or find distasteful one of those foundational things doesn't mean that we have to like wipe aside, like get rid of all of that. You know, you see this so much in basic and unsatisfying critiques of science fiction, where they go, oh, this science fiction is not worth reading because what the author thought was going to happen hasn't come true. And you're like, no, that's science fiction isn't somebody trying to predict what's happening in the future.
It is
a thought experiment of, let's change these three things, or let's posit that the future goes in this direction. What interesting ways can we talk about, like, what new stories can we tell in that system?
Yeah.
And what new things can we learn about humanity, or can we examine about humanity and society and politics if we take those premises as read?
And it's actually the job of an informed reader then to read a book which has a statement and which takes place in a certain world and with certain rules and certain things, and then the reader, after they read this book, they can make up their mind and they can think about all the things, and then when they talk about other people, talk about the book with other people, they can then say all the criticisms they have about this.
I just realized I got completely sidetracked from my notes here.
Because
I said what this book isn't good at, you know. But
it's
great. No, I mean, I just went into one of the things which is good about the book. Oh, well, not good. One of the reasons why you should read it. Like, why you should read it and why you shouldn't read it. Why you shouldn't read it is if you think that any exploration which might have something glorification of military in it is bad, then okay, you don't get to watch that. And also, you're not allowed to watch Top Gun, the latest Top Gun movie. That you're not allowed to watch that.
Yeah. I think the best thing that you just said about this book is that if you have something so foundational, looking from our perspective back into history now, you have something really foundational to everything that comes afterwards, that is very influential, you then can critique it because it is that, like, good. If it wouldn't be if it wouldn't be so influential and it would have been bland, there wouldn't be stuff to critique.
There wouldn't be critique about it.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean,
yeah, it makes sense.
But that's like saying, oh, I don't like the time machine, because later on it's talking about how, you know, in deep into the future, the Molochs and the Eloi are like, oh, you know, these are the working class people and here are the, you know, here are the... It's all like, yeah, that is a critique of something. And just because you didn't like the class system...
It's fine.
It still works. Yeah. And this book still works as an exploration of what would it take to create a fighting force of people who are willing to give their lives for something. And that is, I mean, it's not good. Like, it's not good, but it's what's needed, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Within the framework of this story. However, this book also assumes that we know and care about a lot of stuff that now in the modern day we don't know about. Because again, this book was from, actually, let me look it up here. I have the Wikipedia book over.
1959 or something?
I got the... 1959 is when it was published together. So like 1959, it was published in two parts, in two sections, combined together into a single novel.
Did you feel that in the book, that it was...
Oh, yeah, of course. It's super dated. Yeah, of course. But again, split. No, not really. Because when something's just in two parts, it's okay.
That works
It's okay. Yep. Again, I have other issues with it. But yes, what Heinlein is talking about is a lot of stuff which now we just go, yeah, but isn't that how militaries again it's difficult to tease out what he's writing about, like, based on, you know, all of his friends coming back in the Second World War and all the movies and all the stuff that, like, at the time it was all everyone's views on wars was totally wrapped up
and
in the
propaganda
so that's all fine, but it is one of those things that at one point he's talking about the difference between officers and non-commissioned officers and how this military has got the best ratio. There's very few officers. You're either soldiers or you're non-commissioned officers, which means people like privates who have been promoted, and then you go away and you train at the officer school to become real officers, and those are the people, and this is the one with the fewest, like every other nation, every other army back through history, and it's going on about the... And I was like, well, I understand about this. My father went to officer school. He went to Sandhurst, which is name checked in the book,
right?
It's which is the British Army's officers' college, school, training thing. And so he went there, and he also graduated, and he joined the army. And the first time he was ever on active military deployment, this was in Northern Ireland, he was in charge of people who had been in these, you know, combat situations
How
before.
How old was he then?
He would have been like 22, 23.
That's super young.
Super young. And he would be in charge of in charge of privates who were maybe 20 years older than him and have 20 years more experience of him, but they hadn't been trained as officers and he had been trained as an officer.
Right.
So, yeah. So it's one of those things where, like, these days, there's that kind of distinction or that kind of way it's working. It sounds... like antiquated in a way, but it's so ingrained that it's so foundational that Heinlein just assumes that, yes, that the officers are trained separately and then they come back and then they're given, you know, because they're the ones who've been trained in the philosophy and the morals
and all
of that kind of stuff and all the things that we've had many, many seminars about in the novel Starship Troopers, word for word, and all those discussions. It's a bit strange that a big third of this book is a discussion about what the officer's job is in the military.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't think I care. Like, even as someone whose father was an officer in a military and who did go to Sandhurst, even I don't really care about this as much as Heinlein thinks I should be caring about it. Like the ratio of officers to the normal, you know, men who, the volunteer army, to the...
The infantry.
The non-officers, like the privates, the whoever it is or whatever it is on in the Navy, you know, the normal shipmen or whatever they're called. I don't even know. And there's just too many... there's just too many lectures in this book to the amount of actual action. And sometimes in the middle of action, then they'll be like, and now a flashback too. And I'm thinking, other action where he learned something. No,
a
classroom where there was a discussion there as well. What else was I going to say about this book? Oh yeah, a good audiobook reading, but there was some clumsy, what do you call, additional dialogue reading insert. So it felt like someone had gone back afterwards and gone, oh, let's tighten up some of this dialogue, or you know, there were some mistakes here as well. The front cover of the book, of the audiobook, because it was from the library, the audiobook says, as recommended by sffaudio.com. So this was obviously reviewed by Jesse and those guys. So it was quite funny to see fellow science fiction fantasy audio podcaster people there as well. But then it was the book itself was a rip of a CD collection. So it would say, this book is continued on the next disc. And then it would say, Starship Troopers by Heinlein, chapter 5, like that. So it's quite funny to read to listen to
a digital CD version, but official from the library.
Yes, official from the library, but the library had a CD copy. But that's how SF Audio got their start, is that there would be, boxes of CDs, the new arrivals wouldn't be new releases that you could download from Audible. They would go through literally a big post box full of CDs and send them around and get other people to review them. So that's interesting. So my two more notes. So let's just say overall, I'll give this book 3.5 stars for being mostly interesting, but a bit long, a bit saggy, and concentrating on things which it's good to read because it is foundational, but also some of it sort of like, no, you're getting too much into the weeds here of other stuff. But like, I did enjoy reading it. I did enjoy the experience of those lectures, even if I think it's not enjoyable so much as a science fiction novel. It's really interesting to reread this again after having just read The Forever War and going, why I thought that was frivolous and it isn't a really good rebuttal to Starship Troopers. It's not fun. Like, I mean, when you dodge it at the end to say, the war is a mistake all along. But here's the thing. Was it Cameron Hurley's the Light Brigade?
Yeah.
Is also in dialogue with this. And that's in dialogue with this, there's a reason why that book got 5 stars.
Yes.
Because what it's doing in relation to this and other military science fiction, I thought was like 1,000 times cleverer.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I was just listening to a bit of Ender's Game again because I was like, shall I reread this? I don't think I'm going to, mostly because I didn't get the library wants it back again and I'm not going to pay for it, something like that. But again, that book straight away is like, let's just assume that everyone's read Starship Troopers. Yeah. But what now if one of those was a 6-year-old boy instead of an adult who is deciding, who is wanting his own incentives to sign up for the military and is doing it voluntarily with his eyes open, even if very naively.
Yes.
So that's it.
Yeah,
as well.
That really relies on you knowing all other things about military science fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that book of course goes in a different goes in a very different direction than this as well. Oh, also, spoilers for the end of Starship Troopers, just continual warfare at the end. There isn't a resolution to this book. The book is, well, I guess if we keep the military around for all time, we'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And if we keep fighting this war against the arachnids and bugs and other things, we'll be safe. And you're like, oh, right, military industrial complex, etc., etc.
Yep.
So, which brings me on to the final section of this book.
Yeah.
Which is, now I want to actually say if I think this book depicts fascism and etc., which is like the main critique of it.
Yes.
Putting all of that aside, like if that's bad or good, or not the fascism is bad or good. What I'm saying is, if you allow someone a main premise that it's something's okay to be fascist or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't see something wrong with that for something foundational in a book to be something that's disagreeable.
Yeah.
In this case, the glorification of the military above everything else, to the point where only people who've served in the military even get to vote.
Yes.
They have full citizenship, and people who haven't fought in the military, they don't get full citizenship. They're not allowed to vote.
Yes.
and what it's like in this book outside of the military, not really touched on, so I can't even talk about that. But anyway, I just checked through some of the Wikipedia page as well, because this kind of stuff's on my mind because of various election stuff that's happening in the United States.
Yes.
And which I was very, very nervous about at the beginning this year, because I just assumed that Trump would win the election again. Because I was, you know, just from my looking at different comments about things, looked at Joe Biden and was like, I don't think he managed to defeat Trump once. I don't think he's got it in him to do it a second time.
He was an easy target the whole time.
Who?
Biden.
Joe Biden. But here's the thing, like, much better chance of defeating Trump, again, in hindsight, than Hillary Clinton for many, many different reasons. But I, working on cruise ships around the world, you pick up on comments about other people and you're like, okay. Oh, right. And I, again, the self-selecting people who go on cruise ships and I see on cruise ships and I hear about on cruise ships, just comments of people talking about different bits and pieces. Trump's going to win the election at the end of the year is kind of what I was just picking up from vibes and stuff. I'm just saying,
there's a certain demographic that goes on cruise ships.
But here's the thing. Picking up on comments about that since Kamala Harris. How do you pronounce her name? Oh, no, I don't. I never want to hear anybody.
Kamala,
is it? Either way, mispronouncing a name is like a signal of what your politics is. But the thing is, I've never actually heard people pronounce a name, because anytime any politics comes on any
just
TV.
Just call her Harris and everything will be fine.
Anyway, so since she's in, suddenly different vibe in the world and stuff. And so now I'm like, oh, probably instead of being like what I was in my head thinking, like a 75% chance that Trump was going to win again. Probably about 50-50, which is as good as we're going to get.
It's very 50-50.
Maybe that. Either way, so I've been looking up and stuff and bits and pieces and this comes up on that. And then I was like, oh, you know, is Trump a fascist, you know, kind of thing. Uh-huh. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is very interesting reading this, like, like tick box, like, does, is this, is that, is this, you know, yeah. Like this, like that. And if we tick enough of these, yes, probably a fascist, or wanting a fascist system, or, you know, proponent of fascist ideas and stuff like that. Trump, like, unambiguously, like, weirdly enough, like, oh,
he's saying everything.
I know, he's just saying it all. And that's,
he's saying it all the time.
That's the crazy thing.
And we should just believe him.
But here's the thing, I just read, at the same time I was reading, I'd just finished Starship Troopers. Oh, it was on my mind, you know.
Yeah.
And how, of course, if you watch the movie Starship Troopers, you're like, well, yes, of course, that's fascist, you know. But having just read Starship Troopers, I was like, wait a second, people always say this is fascist, but it kind of isn't. And again, I'm not going to get into that it's any better, like, in any way. Like, there's other things which are, there's other ways of running society, and there's other ways of, there's other systems of politics which aren't fascism, but also aren't good. You know what I mean? But what I'm trying to say is that, like, if you assume that you have to be at war, say, like Britain in the Second World War, they're like, right, we've got to put together an army, we've got to get our navy together, we've got to work on new systems, we've got to invent, I don't know, fucking jet planes and bouncing bombs, and we've got to develop nuclear weapons, and, you know, all the different kind of stuff that's going on there. Mm. Like, we need to work out how to do code breaking, and you see the technological process from the beginning of the Second World War to the end of the Second World War,
it's,
and you're
incredible.
Like, holy shit, that it's was like a massive amount of progress.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the war was over, the Conservative government was voted out, the Labour government was voted in, we set up the NHS, you know, in the United Kingdom anyway, and loads of other stuff, like empires fall, you know, all these different kind of, and you're like, oh, right, okay, but just for those 4 years, 5 years, like, and again, I'm not apologizing. I'm not trying to explain it that fascism or anything is good. I'm just saying it's kind of really, really handy that there was a strong figure in Winston Churchill and other, you know, strong leaders. You know, they could be, you know, leaders in exile from France, or, you know, whatever it's going to be. Having a strong leader, which you're like, yes, this is the guy, and we're all going to get behind him, and he's going to say that, oh, Britain is great, and all that kind of stuff. You're like, oh, actually, there needed to be this yin and yang, you know, there needed to be a Churchill, like this strong macho, well, not macho, but like fatherly figure there.
Yeah, but also in these kind of situations, I am very anti-war, very democratic. So like, all it is just so slow.
Yeah.
And in certain kind of situations, like, decisions just have to be so quick. And it doesn't matter then with the outcome, if it's the correct decision, decision.
Either way, let me just put all that aside. What I'm trying to say is that when you actually get to the heart of it, sometimes there needs to be. Again, what this book is, the premise of this book is that you need some people who've been in the army to be leading the country, who will want soldiers to be leading the country, because they're the ones who will understand it. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can't have wishy-washy people, can't have Chamberlains and blah, 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 like that. You've got to have like, you bring in the strong man who's going to be the strong, whatever it's going to be, you know. And it doesn't have to be strong man, you know, sort of like Argentina, Falklands War, Margaret Thatcher, Iron Lady. So I'm not even saying that it has to be male. I'm just saying that there can be that, you know, whatever the strong figure is that you need there that you've all got to rally behind. Either way, what I'm saying is this book is actually, what reading it now, it's conspicuous how many of these signs of fascism and signalers of fascism, which is sort of like Trump is ticking all of these off, and these other strong men around the world and Putin and these other people who are like ticking these off, they aren't in this book, Starship Troopers.
Again, it's not rallied around one.
There isn't a
person,
big brother figure.
There
isn't a Hitler. There isn't a big brother figure. That's what I'm saying. There isn't even a Churchill.
Mm.
The thing that people are rallying behind, it's sort of like, the people who are running the country and running the war effort are these like ex-soldiers, you know, because they're the ones who can hold political power. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be very much like, you know, they're like the career bureaucrats now. Again, not realistic in any way that those people who once were military people in peacetime are the people who are running it.
Yep.
Because then you're like, that's a bit like, I don't know, off the top of my head, what's a country which is pretty much run by the military? Let's say Egypt or something like that. Maybe not the best system, not the, you know, it's pretty much just all bribes and crookedness and stuff like that. So what my point is that when I was looking through these lists of things which were signals of fascism, this book only had like two of them,
right.
And that is that it's run, that it's, you know, it's the glorification of the military. And if the world is being attacked by aliens and cities on Earth are being destroyed by aliens, you're like, well, maybe we need a military then. And I'm saying the one thing that it's allowing, the world is actually seems to be, everyone's very tolerant. There isn't any like in the world of Starship Troopers back home, there isn't any like racism. Like everyone is looked after very well. People don't get to vote, but then it's sort of like, well, yeah, like people in, again, I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm just saying that there are systems in the world where not everyone has got to vote, but everyone is looked after, you know, in a certain way. Again, I'm not saying that's the best way. I'm just saying that just because some people don't get to vote doesn't automatically mean it's fascism. It's just not.
Yeah.
It's just not how we have it now.
Yeah.
You know.
And also, I think if there are certain circumstances in our world now, not the book, what happens is that if there's, for example, like if there is an autocrat that takes over, and then there's this the military comes over and takes the power.
Yeah.
And reinstates stuff,
yeah.
And then they take themselves back and put the country back to their normal political, however they want to be. So it feels a bit like
It's so often the military who has to do that,
right?
Yeah.
And in the case of a country or the world or whatever is being attacked, there is certain things even in democracy that are enabling certain. A change in rules and certain change in who decides and on what, and in times of war that often becomes then the military.
Yeah.
And in Starship Troopers, I haven't read the book, of course, now, but it could be that because they are in that constant attacking war situation.
That's actually the backstory.
Yeah.
Is that there was a big crisis, and it was when the military took over.
Yeah.
They were like, well, the military can't be in charge, but the only people who get to vote for who is in charge are people who have been in the military.
Okay,
so it's like this second order, the military is in charge. So yeah. If you want to change something in the world, join up for the military, serve your two to 10 years or whatever it's going to be. Mm-hmm.
And then we respect and accept you.
Again, it's one of those things that like there's many countries around the world where military or at least some form of civil service is just part of the way the country works. Mm. Like, you know, South Korea, you know, fucking Israel as well. Again, that's a tricky example to use as a counterexample because it's very difficult to use Israel as a counterexample to all kinds of things at the moment. Either way, my point is that the world in the book is presented, and this is what I just read on Wikipedia, that some people say it's too utopian. Like the presentation of the world is too utopian when actually it's fascist. And I'm like saying, and what I'd like to say is, no, it isn't blatant the fascism in the book isn't blatant. Mm-hmm. It's actually, it almost feels like Heinlein is going out of his way to say, no, this is rational militarism, mm-hmm. rather than using the military as a, like, glorifying the military as an end to a fascist regime staying in power or a fascist leader staying in power, you know.
Also, is it ever talked about what happens to people who don't want to be part of the, are they punished? No, not punished.
Yeah.
Again, Johnny
Rico's father is a successful businessman who they have a pretty good, you know, upper middle class existence. That's the thing in the book, which is a little bit, oh, isn't that convenient? But again, every science fiction author is allowed one or two, isn't that convenient? Because that is then the basis of the book.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that's the foundation of military science fiction since 1959, since this was written, and since every other bit of science fiction, military science fiction in the world, is like in dialogue with this or takes this kind of stuff as read, not every single one of them, just because it's military science fiction, you shouldn't, as a reader, read the military science fiction as, but don't immediately assume fascism unless the author is saying, oh no, this is fascism. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's the way that you can read science fiction and not immediately be caught up on any single time where we're like, the good guys are good and also they're soldiers and they're killing aliens. That's an okay premise unless the author is specifically taking that and then saying, right, now let's explore how this is a kind of fascist ideal, again, like the movie Starship Troopers did. But that's not what the novel Starship Troopers is doing.
Right.
It's doing something different. Mm-hmm. And other science fiction writers are allowed to do something different.
Yeah.
And if they don't think that war is a solution or can be a solution, you then have to understand that that's like a stance that people are taking. You know, that's what it's like. That's almost like a stance that a modern science fiction author is taking. And that's also interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, Starship Troopers is where all this leads back to, both positive and negative. And again, that's not me saying that any of the politics in this novel I agree with or anything. I'm just saying that it's an interesting and rigorous exploration, which is a lot more, for me, a lot more interesting to read than something which is obviously a trivial face value, yay, gung-ho.
Yes.
Because there I'm just sort of like, oh, this is unexamined. An unexamined militarism and unexamined war is goodness. And I read that in quite a bit of even non-military science fiction, especially American science fiction. And you read it and you're just like, oh no, you haven't gone back and done your homework, and you don't understand what's going on here. Like, you don't understand why just giving a good guy a gun and having them kill everything and kill all the aliens
doesn't make it better.
It doesn't make it, like, all you're doing is all you're doing now is the dropships with, you know, bug hunt with power armor that Heinlein did at the beginning and end of Starship Troopers without any of the homework of, you know, going to officer school and being taught the morals and stuff like that. And if you just give me a hint that you're playing in the same space as Starship Troopers or these other science fiction novels which have come afterwards. Like, show me that you've just even read them and understood them and that you're in dialogue with them, and then I can relax for the rest of the novel and just enjoy the story that you're telling without me having to constantly think, wait, do you think that it's good or it's bad? You know, and a lot of, again, not one to pick on the Americans, but there's a lot of military gung-hoism in science fiction written by American authors, which British authors and other authors from around the world, you're like, ah, slightly different. You've got a slightly different premise here, of what's going on. Slightly different solutions at the end of the novels that you're writing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's interesting to observe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, and also just who's the main character in the book.
Yeah.
And in America, it's very much often the hero is the soldier. And in other places around the rest of the world, the hero might not be the soldier. Mm. Let me put it that way. There might be other stuff going on. There might be other things in other... There's parts of war stories which are being told which aren't completely revolving around the soldier.
Yeah.
Right. That's it. That's my talk about Starship Troopers by Heinlein.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Good discussion.
Good discussion. I think it...
Sorry if I made the book sound not fun. It is actually interesting to read, but again, only 3.5 stars. But it makes the SFBRP must read list.
It's a 3.5 stars.
It's
with
the
a
one
plus.
It's the lowest for me. It's the lowest rated one, but it's, again, if you just go into it with what we've said in mind, and it's an interesting read. It's like, it's fun on the intellectual level, even if the pacing is a bit off as a novel.
And you can have your criticisms about it. And there's
many criticisms,
exactly. and I think that is kind of like the interesting aspect of it, is the foundational nature of it, and the amount of things that you can talk about around it.
Just for example, like I say, I probably won't do another episode about Ender's Game because we've done a few episodes of that already.
Yeah.
But just like re-listening to the start of it, that society. Way more fascist than, like, super more fascist again, but obviously acknowledges that, and so it's that is yes, when you get down to child soldiers of fascists, like the children will fight
a
for
society
us levels of,
that uses children
as pawns in the war, you're like, all right, okay, so we're just going right to the final days of the Third Reich, where they're like, old people and children come out and defend Berlin, and you're like, how about let's not, you know what I mean? So again, not to say that anything good was happening there on either side of the siege of Berlin. Anyway, let's wrap it up there.
Yeah.
My almost once per episode appeal. Please don't cancel me for approaching.
Stop doing that.
No,
really, it's
just,
no. We're talking. I think this episode really showed really well that you can accept certain things when authors write certain stories.
Yeah.
And
okay, just because I appreciate something problematic doesn't make me problematic.
No,
I think that's all I'm trying to. That's
you
all
don't
I'm trying
need to
claim.
Continuously say that because that makes me feel bad. And you don't need to do that. You have listeners, and we just talk about books that we read, and that's
in 15 years' time when I reread this book again. And someone listens back to this episode, and the world has moved on 15 years into the future. Please don't cancel me for anything I just said. All right, Juliana's frowning at me. Doesn't make good podcasting.
All right.
That's it. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Lou Bird. Juliana is at JUKU Berlin, also on Mastodon too. You can find links. You can support us on Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/Luke Burridge. And I post lots of stuff about there on juggling, but also we do have quite a few listeners to the Science Fiction Book Review podcast who support us on Patreon. If you
thank
support
you
us,
so much
if
for
you
that.
Support us at the $25 or euros per month level, for even 1 month you get to pick the topic, which means on the SFBIP, if you're an SFBIP listener, you get to pick the book that we're going to review.
Yes,
done a few,
we've done that
fun books a few times like that. So patreon.com/Luke Burridge, and then also follow me on Goodreads, but become my friends on Goodreads, let me say, and then I can also see what you think about Starship Troopers. So here, 4.01 stars average rating across the whole of Goodreads.
Yeah.
But let's scroll down and we can see Lawrence rated it 5 stars. Brian, Mario the Lone Wolf, Book Wolf Rated it 5 stars. Julie Davis rated it 4 stars. Buzz 5, David 4 stars. Yeah, lots of 4 and 5 stars here. Rick, Michael, yeah, pretty much lots of 4 and 5 stars here. But let me go down to more reviews. Let me see if I can find someone who gave it 3 stars. Matthew Kern rated it 3 stars. Someone told me this was quite different from the 90s B movie of the same name. Yep, way different. So yeah, glad I listened to it. I have wondered about it for over a decade. So yeah, that's someone who's into it. Yeah, and quite a few other people have given it 3 and 2 stars. A 1 star from Bugdun. So bad he rated it. Well, Bugdun, bugs are the enemy in this book, so I understand that Bug isn't into it. But yes, lots of other people giving it 2 and 1 stars. I'm not saying that they're wrong to give it 2 and 1 stars, but this is Paul's one-star review. They must have accidentally printed the wrong title on this book. This boring Hugo Award winner should have been called Humdrum Trooper. With a title like Starship Trooper, we'd think there would be some action, but it was nothing more than an infantryman's boring account of his early military service, bookended by the first and last champers with weak battles. Heinlein used the story to preach his political and social views. Hardly any science fictions. Don't waste your time with this one. Yeah, and I'm just saying that Heinlein preaching his political and social views, which again, I'm not even sure they were his political and social views, but whatever he's doing, I don't felt like it was preaching. I felt like it was somebody, it was a story about somebody learning about stuff, which I think is slightly different than a book about preaching. Either way, 1-star reviews are valid. That's it. Thanks a lot for listening. I just realized I've done another bit of the review and Juliana's pointedly not speaking, so it just sounds like I'm talking.
You're just doing your thing.
No, but you're like, nodding and shaking your head at me. Like, just you can
feels
respond.
Like you're in the third loop of ending the podcast.
I am, but I just want to have like one word from you so it doesn't feel like I've just wrapped it up. Say something.
What's the next book?
The next book. There we go. We're getting onto it. Well, I don't know. I just finished a book by CJ Cherry called Heavy Time, which I review. But also I did read The Time Machine, which I'm not sure if I'm going to review again, and Roadside Picnic, which I think I would like to review again.
Okay.
So let's do, next up, let's do Roadside Picnic and decide if Roadside Picnic makes it into the SFBRP must read list.
Sounds interesting.
That was in the candidate list, you know, that one on the bottom.
Yeah.
So that'll be the next episode, Roadside Picnic. Let's check that out on the next episode.
Cool.
That's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.